Welcome to Trinity Sunday, which is the Sunday of the year that supposedly witnesses more heresy in preaching than the other 51 Sundays combined. This could be fun. It's also the Sunday when people like me, people who put together preaching rotas and invite people to preach at particular times of the year, when people like me might choose to find a very thoughtful seminarian who would be much more aware of the current theological disputations and therefore be able to speak more accurately to this particular Sunday. And here we are, you and I, together to work this out. This Sunday, if you'll note, there's a theme that is running through our texts. And especially if you look at our very short text, the letter that we have from Paul, his second letter to the Christians in Corinth and the Gospel of Matthew. And you'll see this theme running through them. It's as if the framers of the lectionary were looking for just about any text they could find that would have the words God, Jesus, and Holy Spirit in them. And they have found them. And, I mean no disrespect to those framers, and I think that the authors who are writing these various accounts might have had something more in mind. And so I'd actually like to spend some more time with that this Sunday. Which means that for this Sunday, I'm going to set aside some of the time-honored Trinity Sunday traditions that we know and love. For instance, St. Patrick's clover, right? Three leaves, one plant. And the metaphor of the egg, shell, white, yolk. And the metaphor of water, steam, liquid, ice. The metaphor of the apple, skin, flesh, core. And the metaphor of the person, husband, father, priest. These all have great use. And, like any metaphor, they come up to a breaking point. And so, for this year, I'm going to just set those aside. And what I would like for us to do is to spend some time with what, over millennia, we have come to understand as the essential nature of God. And what that might mean to know of the nature of the present infinite for us, the finite. And I think it might be helpful to start at the beginning. Because in the beginning, we hear something that is really helpful for this enterprise. And it's not simply the presence of the Spirit brooding over the waters. I was taught this week when I recently heard a biblical scholar, Rolf Jacobson, talk about this text, and I had never heard it this way before. Jacobson says that in the structure itself of our account of how all that is came into being, with the exception of light, which is good in and of itself, everything else comes into being in relatedness. Everything comes into being in balanced relatedness, in pairs and triad. Ponder that for a moment. Day and night, waters and sky, earth and seas, plants and trees, sun and stars, sea creatures and winged birds, cattle and reptiles and wild animals. All is created in balanced relatedness. Goodness is known in relationship. And then the Creator creates human beings, Adam. And when this happens, our text has this remarkable component to it. Let us create human beings in our own image, according to our likeness. The plural. In a monotheistic tradition, the plural is present in the text. And this has made the people of God puzzled and delighted for millennia. What might this mean? Well, for some biblical scholars, they say, yes, and this points to an understanding of the divine court, the heavenly court that was understood to be surrounding God in the cosmos, which absolutely could be what we find. And I also find real meaning in what some of our early church theologians and what some current day biblical scholars say when they look into these words, let us in our, and they see a reflection of the divine Trinity, this reciprocal being, three persons, one being. So what might this mean? What might this mean for us as we seek to live out our lives if the very creation is in fundamental relatedness? About a decade or so ago, I was in a gathering of folks that Bishop Mark Andrus, our bishop in this diocese, was speaking with, and I think this line, ironically, was a throwaway line. He said, you know, there really is no away that we throw things to. And I sat back when I heard that because it's really obvious. And it's absolutely true. There is no away that we throw things to. No, when you get rid of that couch or that old cell phone or that IKEA, whatever it was, it may leave your home, but it's got to go somewhere. There is no away. There is no away. And for a while now, months, weeks, days, I have been thinking about this in relationship to a particular and a pernicious virus that we have in, I think, in humankind, but we particularly see it here in this country. And it is this belief that we travel our own course by ourselves in our lives, and that the whatever happens to others is theirs, and that our personal liberty is the greatest good. And so then, if there are those with whom I am in disagreement, or I distrust, or that seek maybe to do me harm, or maybe even seek out my destruction, I push them away, beyond me, where I do not have to see or encounter them. And this away takes many forms. In our country in particular, it takes the form of prisons. If you have ever visited a state or a federal prison, you know you have to go very far away to get there. It might take the form of wanting those people to be away in a red state. Or what we have been seeing particularly resurging at this point in American history is this notion of racial purity, that anyone who doesn't look like me must be away. And this sense comes into direct opposition with what we hear this morning from our texts on this Feast of the Holy Trinity, which is that God in God's self is fundamentally, essentially in relationship. And so if that's the case, if life within God is fundamentally related, then what are our lives as human beings meant to be? Well, here I find our friend Paul of Tarsus to be helpful. And, you know, it's not every Sunday that we get to say that, but this Sunday it is particularly true. Because what we have, and you can look in your bulletin, the sliver of text we have from Paul's second letter to those Christians in Corinth is very, very slim. It is basically the benediction, the blessing of this letter. And, you know, spoiler alert, I think the reason why it might be there is because it contains these words, God, Jesus, and Holy Spirit. And it points to something that I think is very important, because Paul is writing this letter, as you may know, because he is very, very frustrated. He has been with these Christians in Corinth, and he has left. And what he hears is that there's this group within the group, some call the super apostles, that have called into question Paul's competency and his authority. And he is really angry. And so he's writing this letter in the midst of tremendous conflict. And I think we get that. Because Paul is writing this letter to people who are uncertain, who are afraid, who are angry, who are embittered. People like perhaps you and me. And so what he says to them as he closes the letter is critical. Because what he does is he blesses them. He reminds them of the purpose of human community, right? To love one another, to agree with one another, to seek each other's peace, to greet one another with a holy kiss. And he reminds them, he reminds us, and my guess is, in writing this, he has to remind himself of the source of this relatedness, which is actually not our willingness or ability. The source of this relatedness is in the Trinity. And the ways that we draw upon this source come out in the ways of grace and love and communion. Because this isn't always easy, is it? Several weeks ago, Liz preached a sermon about what it's like to live an intentional Christian community. And it was not easy. And these were with people that she loved, let alone people with whom we disagree. And so Paul's call to these sources of transforming relatedness are essential for us to hear now, today. Because I am reminded of those in our time and in our place who have been able to live by this. I think of our brothers and sisters at Emmanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina, and the Amish community in Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania. Both were able to live out of a place of forgiveness when others were calling for vengeance. And I don't believe it's because they are different than we are, but instead because they were drawing on this source. They trusted in this truth that the God of all that is, present in the beginning, in our present moment, and when everything comes to completion, is a God that we can place our trust in, because all of us essentially are related.